Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. Who better to shed light on matters involving, among other things, our intelligence and, more generally, the state of the war for the free world than a man who spent his career in the service of the United States Navy as a naval intelligence officer. His name is Captain James Fennell. These days, he is a senior fellow with the Geneva Center for Security Policy, not to be confused with what we think of as the real one here in Washington, D.C. But he is a very, very important contributor to, I think, our situational awareness about what we're confronting, notably in his role as a member of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. Captain, it's good to have you with us, sir. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Great to be back, Frank. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Let me ask you for kind of an overall assessment of the sorts of indicators and warnings that you monitored, of course, as the senior intelligence guy for the U.S. Pacific Fleet during part of your distinguished service in uniform. What are you seeing out there now, maybe over the horizon, maybe not so much, that suggests the Chinese Communist Party is preparing to add kinetic operations to what it's been calling its unrestricted warfare against the United States? In other words, going to actual combat against us and or our allies out in that region?
Well, Frank, there's a lot that's going on. I think at the strategic level, you have the speech that Xi Jinping gave on July 1st with the 100th anniversary of the establishment of the Chinese Communist Party, where he talked about, people will bash their head on the Great Wall of Steel of China. And so there's this kind of a very militaristic tone to that speech that I think people had not anticipated. They thought it would have been much more celebration of the establishment of the Chinese Communist Party, but Xi turned it into something that was very clear that if you mess with us, and when he says mess with us, I mean, that's a euphemism for if you get involved with Taiwan, we're going to crush you. And so that was unusual. Then we have reports here this week of, confirmed now air activity routinely happening from the islands and the Spratlys of Reef and Fiery Cross Reef, which Xi had promised President Obama that he wouldn't do that in 2014. And here we are 7 years later, and they're now routinely flying out of there. And those reports have just come out. We have the reports of the PLA Air Forces, Naval and Air Forces, conducting large scale penetrations of Taiwan's air defense identification zone, over 28 aircraft here in the last month or so. We have reports just yesterday of Chinese naval vessels operating east of Taiwan. And this is now becoming a recurring operation. It used to be kind of the transit from the East China Sea bases, go through the Miyako Strait, down along the east coast of Taiwan, well out maybe 100 miles away, and then come through the Bashi Channel into the South China Sea as kind of a transit. But now they're operating in the Philippine Sea, and we're now starting to think about China can attack Taiwan from all vectors, from the east, from the west, from the north, and from the south. And so you get all of their language, all of their rhetoric, and then their daily operations. And then they've just now, had here in the last 24, 48 hours, extreme consternation, and they've been very vocal about even the U.S. military aircraft, the C-146 Dakota, that was for medical purposes, had landed in Taiwan. And now we see Chinese rhetoric and Chinese press condemning that and saying that crosses one of their red lines from their 2005 anti-secession law. So everything seems to be trending towards China's eventual, use of force if they cannot force Taiwan to capitulate. And it seems to be intensifying at a rate that, from my perspective, is reflective of what they think they can get away with because of the essentially lack of resolve that they see in Washington.
Now, this is really the profoundly concerning question is, are they not only on track to act on long-standing ambitions in the region, and Taiwan being among the most obvious, but whether they see a window of opportunity for doing that in light of the Biden administration's, well, personnel, for one thing, and seeming policy predilections. And unfortunately, we're dealing with this at a time when others are seemingly asserting themselves in the Pacific as well. You were based for many years, of course, out in the headquarters of the U.S. Pacific Fleet, in Honolulu. Talk about what we're seeing now in the way of operations of not just the Chinese, but the Russians within what you might call striking distance of that command and, of course, Pearl Harbor and our important military facilities in Hawaii.
Right. I think we've had some reporting here in the last month about Russian naval and air forces operating in and around the Hawaiian op area, in some part to, spy on exercises that the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command is having, but also just also sending a signal. And I have to say that the reports that I read and the surface ships that were out there, we haven't seen that. Even in the Cold War, we didn't see the Russians come and send that many ships operating within 100 miles of Honolulu, 200 miles maybe. So the point is, Russia also, I think, you know, they say that old saying that, a shark can smell blood in the water. And Russia is now really pressing the envelope challenge anything that the United States does. They're doing the same thing in the Black Sea and other areas, but from the perspective of the Pacific, the idea that Russian ships would and aircraft would sortie all the way out to the Hawaiian area is a little bit alarming. And the fact that you don't seem to be prepared for it is another thing we can talk about. But the lack of awareness of what does this mean and how is it possible that China and Russia are actually collaborating and cooperating together to really press America and to, even if they don't take any military action, the signal they're sending to the world is that America is in decline. And that's what China's been saying for the last 10 years, at least, that America is a declining nation and they are the rising nation. And by demonstrating physical acts like Russia and China are doing, it supports their thesis.
And let's go to that place you touched on there a moment ago, Jim Fennell, and that is the readiness of our forces to contend with these sorts of threats. This is a twofold question, I guess. One is just, do we have the assets that we need out there, in particular in light of the deployment of the one carrier we have in the Pacific and its battle group, the Reagan, now off to cover our retreat from Afghanistan, on the one hand? And secondly, Jim, you have called for the resignation of senior military leaders, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the chief of naval operations specifically, for what they are doing to contribute to what seems to be a serious assault on the, well, the morale, but actually the unit cohesion and therefore the readiness of our forces through their embrace of all of this critical race theory, race warfare, I would call it, against the United States Armed Forces. Talk about both of those, if you would.
Well, Frank, I think, in terms of readiness and force posture, we've discussed this before, and I've been very vocal and written about this, that the United States Navy and our military forces in the Pacific are not adequate enough to deter the PRC from the things we were talking about previously. And the fact that we would send away the Ronald Reagan to cover a retreat from Afghanistan, it's militarily laughable. And I'm very distressed about this because we had an understanding in the Department of Defense that after the 9/11 and our involvement with the initial strikes in Afghanistan and Iraq in 2003, We sent the USS Kitty Hawk, which had been our forward deployed carrier to Japan, which is now the Reagan. And it went there. There was some controversy even then when we did it because, we thought, what would this do to the alliance with Japan? Because the carrier's there to protect Japan and the region. And when we pulled it back at the end of that 2003, there was kind of this understanding that out in the Westpac with 7th Fleet, with Pacific Fleet, and with the Pentagon, that we would never do that again. And so the fact that we would do this right now to cover what? I mean, there's really no threat from our forces leaving. In fact, they left on planes. So I'm not sure what it was required to have the Reagan be out there. And so that sends a signal clearly that America thinks that, maybe it's not that important to have a carrier in the Pacific. And so there will be some that will claim, why do we even keep a forward deployed carrier? And they will be using this deployment as justification. And then when you talk about the leadership, I'll just say, publicly, General Milley and Admiral Gilday, and it doesn't please me to say this in any way, shape, or form. I'm not pleased to say this. But from my opinion, those two officers need to resign for the good of the nation. What they've done by adopting and accepting unsubstantiated claims from a biased press and accuse essentially there's the people in their service of being racists, of being Nazis. This is outrageous. And they need to step down. They've lost the trust and confidence of the people that they are overseeing, and they've lost the trust and confidence of America. And this is outrageous that they would say things like this. To have a chairman of the Joint Chiefs, use foul language in front of the president of the United States or around his advisors and tell him that he's the guy with the guns. This is very, very dangerous. And this man should be removed. He is no longer has the qualifications and trust to be in the position he's in. And it's very dangerous that we have leaders now that are so swept up in popular culture. When I joined the Navy, we were told, the one thing about the military is that we did not get involved with fad. If people were wearing their hair a certain way, or people were getting tattoos, or people were wearing certain clothes, or whatever it was, the military was immune from that because our job was to protect the American people and focus only on that. And this report from Lieutenant General Schmidley and Admiral Montgomery, Rear Admiral Montgomery, about the nature of the Navy and the fact that we are not focusing on warfighting, I think that should be examined and discussed on Capitol Hill, and changes need to be made.
We're going to be talking with Congressman Chris Stewart, one of those who I think feels very much the way you do about that important need for both a serious debate on how the military is being now fundamentally transformed, to coin a phrase, and what can be done to rectify this situation. Captain Fennell, we appreciate your service to our country, both in uniform and that you are rendering these days, among other things, as a member of the Committee on the Present Danger of China. Thank you for visiting with us from time to time, and I hope you'll come back soon, as we definitely need to stay very much abreast of the kinds of threat assessments you're providing. Next up, we will speak with John Rossomondo. We'll take a closer look at how the United States military is being trained by, it seems, Marxists. What's up with that? More that and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and I'm pleased to say we're joined by my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, John Rossomondo. He is our senior associate on matters involving national security, specifically the Defense Department and what is going on there. And wanted to catch up with him, particularly in furtherance of the conversation we were just having with Jim Fennell, about the degree to which we're witnessing senior military leadership, both uniformed and on the civilian side of the Defense Department, pursuing an agenda that is highly deleterious to the readiness, the unit cohesion, and the, well, warfighting capability of our armed forces at a moment when, for a variety of reasons, including those Jim Fennell talked about, that may be exceedingly dangerous to our nation as a result of various threats we're facing at the moment and that are building. John Rossimondo, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, and thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with us about a problem that, among other things, you've just written about at the center's website, securefreedom.org, entitled DOD Extremism Contractor, Tied to Initiative, Backed by Pro-Antifa German communists. This is a whole nother wrinkle. Let's come to that in a minute. But first, just sort of more generally, John, give us your take on what's going on at the Pentagon at the moment in terms of this sort of woke agenda, some call it. I think of it as essentially an effort fundamentally to transform the United States military. But what are the symptoms of what's going on there that we should be alert to?
Well, we should be alert to the fact that our top brass have chosen to embrace critical race theory and push a radical, divisive, anti-unit cohesion-based program that focuses on how all white people are intrinsically racist. It doesn't matter, whether you're you could have black, Hispanic, spouse, partner, family members, or so forth. But because of so-called structures of racism, you're a racist. And, we need to enforce things like Ibram X. Kendi's How to Be an Anti-Racist, which the Chief of Naval Operations, Michael Gilday, endorsed, and also, we have Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, saying that anybody who supported Donald Trump is a Nazi. It says that you and I, Frank, are brown shirt. This is, what the heck are we becoming, the Soviet Union?
Well, it does seem as though one of the upshots of the program that you've been writing about, John, this so-called Countering Extremism Working Group and the various contractors and agendas that it's employing is about really purging the military of people that are deemed to be extremists because they did support Donald Trump or otherwise. And there's essentially, it seems, a kind of political commissar approach being instituted in the ranks. And I'm just wondering, when you see some of the connections that you've illuminated in this piece, particularly about the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung, the sort of Marxist character of this approach is not altogether surprising. Talk a little bit about this Stiftung, first of all, what it is, and how it seems now to be involved in this effort to purge patriots and otherwise very dramatically make over our United States military.
Well, the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung was established in 1990 following the fall of the Berlin Wall by the East German Communist Party, which rebranded itself as the Party of Democratic Socialism. And it created this organization as a think tank. Many of the leaders of this organization were either informants of the Stasi who were, what we're seeing in the military.
That was the German, East German intelligence operation.
Exactly.
Secret the police
German,
and all that.
Secret police. These informants were the ones who went and ratted people for not being properly communist to the secret police, and they were then thrown in prison or had their lives destroyed, kind of like tortured, not at least we're having some sort of degree of psychological torture maybe going on in the military. For those who don't conform, just look at that colonel in the Space Force who was drummed out for speaking up.
Lieutenant Colonel Matt Lohmeyer.
Exactly.
Who's actually, interestingly enough, specialized in Marxism in the military. That no secret about why they needed to get rid of him, needless to say. But how does this Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung tie into the sort of critical race theory training, indoctrination, and purging underway in the military at the moment, John?
Well, the West Point chose to hire a company called Moonshot CVE out of London, England, whose CEO, a lady by the name of Vidya Ramalingam, is a contributor to an organization at American University called PERIL, which has been either funded or cooperated with the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation. Ms. Ramalingam participated in a panel with PERIL's head in Germany last December that included a panelist from the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation. I mean, what this just shows is that the ideology is the same. I mean, this, Rosa Luxemburg Foundation funds Antifa in Germany, and it publishes the oldest Antifa magazine in the world that started in East Berlin in 1987, called the Antifascistisches Blatt. And that magazine's editor is the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation's expert on right-wing extremism. And
so let me just make sure I am clear about this, John. You're saying that this foundation in Germany, this think tank, as you call it, has been involved with the U.S. Military Academy at West Point in presumably some of its critical race theory style training, and has very direct ties to Antifa, which, of course, the East German Stasi helped put together, as I understand it, or its predecessors.
Which, just let me back up a little bit. This Moonshot CV is writing the Pentagon Commission brief on extremism together with West Point. So Countering Terrorism Center.
So it's not that's just at West Point, it's for the military more broadly. But this
Ms. Ramalingam met with Bishop Garrison, who's the quote-unquote chief diversity officer at the Pentagon,
running this countering extremism working group, which has become quite notorious. Yeah. So, John, when you look at these connections, it does bespeak, it seems to me, the underlying problem with this whole critical race business, which is that it is a Marxist strategy for dividing and taking down its opposition, particularly in a country like the United States. And it is a nightmare, I think, that it's being imposed upon the United States military as a clear bid to render it ineffectual and therefore incapable of doing the work we need it to be able to do, namely to deter our adversaries and, if necessary, to defend us against them. John, this is such important work. Thank you for doing it at the Center for Security Policy and for joining us from time to time to talk a bit about it. And I know you'll be keeping an eye on the effects of all of this. We're going to talk a bit more about them with Congressman Chris Stewart of Utah, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, get his take on what's happening and what needs to be done about this. And in the meantime, we're going to further visit with another specialist in these kinds of enemy within problems, the great Trevor Loudon, right after this. John, thank you for joining us. Come back to us again soon, if you would. Next up, Trevor Loudon, right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and we are joined once again by one of my favorite people. He is Trevor Loudon. He is an extraordinary resource, an import from New Zealand, hence what he calls his southern accent. He is an author and filmmaker, notably of The Enemies Within, which is an incredible deep dive into the degree to which our government has been penetrated by Marxists and communists and others who embrace this kind of fundamental transformation of our country that is the object of the Marxists, both in China, of course, and elsewhere, as well as in our own country. And focusing in on this is a very important feature of this program, and I'm always pleased to have Trevor's help in doing so. Trevor, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Good to have you with us.
Hey. Thanks for having me on, Frank. Always a pleasure.
I know that you've been following over the years this outfit that we were just talking about with John Rosamondo, a group called the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation, or Stiftung in Germany. Give us a little bit of a background on this group and how it fits into kind of the program of active measures, as they're called, that the communists have used with great effect for many, many years and seem to be doing rather handsomely with at the moment with respect to our Pentagon.
Yeah, well, look, the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung, which is based in Manhattan, and the parent body, the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation of Berlin, is a wholly owned organization by the German left party, Die Linke, which used to be called the Party for Democratic Socialism, which used to be called the Socialist Unity Party, the former East German Communist Party. Now, the left party is under constant surveillance by the German intelligence services because it is heavily linked to Russia. It has offices in Moscow. It has offices in Beijing and offices in several other countries, including in New York and Manhattan. It is basically a continuation of the old East German Communist Party, and it is working in America with Black Lives Matter, with the Bernie Sanders organization, with Democratic Socialists of America, etc. It is an international influence operation targeting the Democratic Party in the United States and the social movements. It shouldn't be allowed to operate on U.S. soil. It's an agency of a foreign government.
But just to put a fine point on it, a hugely dangerous organization, should it have anything to do with the United States military, in particular, purging people from its ranks on the grounds that they are extremists?
Well, this is one of the most extreme organizations in the world. It is a continuation Asian arm of the East German Communist Party and works with the Russians. So these are enemies of the United States military, and they are having influence on who is allowed to stay in the U.S. military and who isn't. You know, what could possibly go wrong?
That's right, our favorite expression. A lot is the short answer. Hey, let me turn more generally to another problem that you have been doing really important work along with Sam Faddis. You're both extraordinarily important contributors to the work of the Committee on the Present Danger, China, and the Accountability Initiative, which people can check out at accountabilityinitiative.org, has become a terrific resource on a problem associated with the Chinese Communist Party's penetration of our government, as well as other extremist entities. Talk a bit about, if you will, Trevor, whether the fact that we seemingly have large numbers of people who have been, well, at least compromised by the CCP in sensitive senior positions throughout all of the relevant national security agencies of the United States government may be contributing, for example, to, and this is just a symptom of the problem, but I think an instructive one nonetheless, the present evident disinterest of the Biden administration in doing what its predecessors have done going back to 1959 without interruption, namely proclaiming Captive Nations Week and associating this country very directly with those who have been enslaved by various totalitarians under that rubric of captive nations. Just, you know, as a fellow who has studied what our totalitarian enemies are up to and how they are proceeding to try to advance their agenda at our expense and that of other freedom-loving people, what's going on here, and what does it tell us about who's running the government of the United States at the moment?
Well, exactly. You know, we're seeing right now a situation where the head of Homeland Security, Mayorkas, is telling Cubans not to come to the United States. If Cubans who are trying to overthrow communism in their country, and that's where he came from himself, by the way, are not allowed to come here while hundreds of thousands of Mexicans or Guatemalans or Iranians or Lebanese or Qataris are allowed to stream across the southern border. Well, that shows a deep inconsistency right there. But in the Bay Area, what we've seen in recent times, see, Nancy Pelosi used to be willing to stand up to China sometimes. She would work with the Falun Gong in San Francisco, who are very, very opposed to the Communist Party of China. That is all ended now because the Chinese have made so much inroad into the Bay Area. They pretty much run San Francisco and Bay Area politics. And so they are just not willing to stand.
And the democratic machine of the Bay Area.
Right. You know, and you've had two Chinese spies identified there in recent times working with, and, you know, senators and congressmen on intelligence committees. You know, we had Eric Swalwell, deeply associated with the Chinese spy Christine Fong. And then you had Ro Khanna associated with her. And he serves on the Armed Services Committee, I believe. And you also have Judy Chu, a very, very powerful congresswoman from Los Angeles. And
now the Deputy Secretary of Labor.
Exactly. And now you have Nancy Pelosi refusing to take Eric Swalwell off the Intelligence Committee because I believe she doesn't want to offend the Chinese. And the other Chinese spy in the area, Russell Lowe, was serving for 20 years as the office manager for Dianne Feinstein when she was on the Intelligence Committee in the Senate.
Among other things, it's chairman, right?
The chairman.
Sure. Again, part of what is so mind-boggling about all of this is how is it being perceived by the Chinese? I asked this question of Captain Jim Fennell a moment ago, but I'd like your take on it as well. Is it conceivable that this is doing anything other than emboldening them to believe that they can get away with murder if they choose to? Conceivably the murder of large numbers of Americans in a conflict, inspired perhaps, or at least further catalyzed by the perception that we are at best irresolute and weak and at worst in their thrall.
Well, I see the U.S. military being purged by people, you know, associated with the Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung, which the Chinese Communist Party is involved with too. So they see that happening. They see a very weak administration. They see a weakening of U.S. military strength. You know, the Chinese military is getting ready for war. The U.S. military is getting ready for mascara. You know, what do they think? You know, they must be thinking this is just too easy. You know, we are the whole world balance of power has changed in the last few months in favor of Russia, China, and Iran.
Yes, and that's not good for our country, needless to say, as well as a lot of other places that we care about. When you look at this in the prism of the accountability initiative of Trevor Loudon, I think we haven't yet talked on this program, with you at least, about a particularly problematic individual, it seems to me, who has been placed in a very sensitive position in the White House Office of Presidential Personnel. Talk about this fellow, Thomas Zimmerman. What do we know about him and his background, and what are the implications of the present position that he has for the sorts of problems you've just been describing?
Well, if Xi Jinping was basically choosing the security personnel of the United States, he probably couldn't do a better job, because Zimmerman has worked in a Chinese institution known as a recruiting center for Chinese spies. And now he's going to be basically vetting security appointments for the Biden administration. Now, this should be nationwide headlines every day. It should be on TV every night. This is one of the most egregious security failures in American history. But, you know, it's opening the country up for disaster. But there's very little being talked about this.
And why is that, do you think, Trevor? I mean, you've studied this closely. You've done probably more than anybody to expose this. There are agencies of the government, counterintelligence services, that are supposedly assigned this responsibility. They seem to be absolutely asleep at the switch. And even, and we'll be talking with a member of one of the oversight committees, but even the Congress itself, its intelligence committees, seem to be really derelict in all of this. What is going on?
Well, I think you've had a penetration of the intelligence services that's been going on for a while. And under Obama, you had people put in charge of those agencies of deeply questionable loyalty. You know, Diana West, in a great book, The Red Thread, points out the communist backgrounds of James Comey of the FBI, of John Brennan of the CIA. So they are now actually being weaponized against patriotic US citizens rather than the enemies of America. It is almost like the KGB is now in charge of American intelligence services, or the Chinese intelligence.
Yeah, I was going to say, even worse, probably the Ministry of State Security of Communist China. Trevor, we have to leave it at that, I'm sorry to say, but only temporarily. We will have you back soon, I hope, with updates on all of this. And thank you, among other things, Trevor, for what you are doing with the accountabilityinitiative.org to help it be a means of informing Americans about the magnitude of this problem and why it must be addressed properly. We'll talk about that and more with Congressman Chris Stewart.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to a very important guest and conversation. The guest is Congressman Chris Stewart. He is a member of the House Intelligence Committee. He represents the people of Utah in the House of Representatives. He is an accomplished and highly decorated military veteran of the United States Air Force, an author, and just a remarkable public servant in so many respects. We're always delighted to have a chance to chat with him. Congressman, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Great to be with you, sir. Appreciate the great work that you and your organization does. And it's very important, especially that this just everyone recognizes is a critical time.
Well, thank you. This is a critical time in part because of the growing dangers that we are facing, as you know so well, from communist China. And I'm interested in your take on whether, to the extent you can share, you know, your insights from the classified domain about what's going on. The Chinese seemingly are becoming more and more bellicose, not just rhetorically, but in terms of their military activities. Does this portend an impending crisis, not just of the unrestricted economic and political and information warfare types, which have been going on now, as you know, for some time, but of perhaps a kinetic kind as well?
Well, of course, we want to avoid that, right? That's the whole purpose of national security, national defense, is to be such a deterrent that you never have to employ kinetic weapons and you never have to actually go to war. But history would tell us that that's not always the case, right? You're not always able to do that. And I think you stated it very well in the sense that China was a little coy for the last generation. They've kind of flown under the radar, to use, you know, an overused phrase. They've been fairly subtle in stating their goals and ambitions, but that's certainly not the case any longer. Look at Hong Kong. During the middle of the pandemic, they looked at Hong Kong and had honored the agreements up to those point. They had tens of thousands of security forces surrounding Hong Kong all through the protest. And I know that seems like ancient history. It was only a couple of years ago. But at one point, you had half of the people of Hong Kong out in the streets protesting the influence, the rising influence of China within Hong Kong. The United States looked away. We became absorbed with our own problems and the pandemic. And China said, now is the time to move. They did. And we've lost Hong Kong forever. Everyone recognizes that. And now you look at Taiwan and you have to compare the rhetoric and the behavior towards Hong Kong. And now they're focused on Taiwan. And you have to at least ask the question, what are their intentions there? And finally, Frank, let me say this. President Xi and others have made it very, very clear. It is a stated goal. The Belt Road Initiative is unambiguous on this. By the 100th anniversary of the creation of the Communist Party within China, they will be the single dominant force within the world militarily, diplomatically, economically, technologically, not a peer competitor, not a co-superpower, the single dominant force. And that is what we have to prepare for.
Well, that's a long time off. I'm fearful of what may happen in the interval, Congressman Stewart, and I think that all of us should be very much alive to the possibility that, as you say, if the Chinese Communist Party sees the conditions as being ripe for further aggressive action, perhaps, as you say, against Taiwan, perhaps against others in the Western Pacific, friends and allies and interests of ours, theirs, perhaps against us, who knows? This is a timetable that could be accelerated considerably, which brings me again to questions of what we are doing as a nation in the face of other forms of Chinese, well, as they call it, unrestricted warfare, specifically the penetration of our country and subversion, really, of it. Notably, I know you on the House Armed Intelligence Committee have been concerned about what is going on in corporate America by way of sort of weaponizing it against us on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party. Talk a bit about that, if you would.
Yeah. It's become the focus of the House Intelligence Committee as we've looked at China's ambitions. You know, you look at their military and the capabilities we have there, but that's not the only thing we have to deal with. It's not the only thing we have to fear. And this subject that you bring up is, I think, a great example of that. China's influence some of the highest level CEOs, some of the highest leadership within our private sector, within the Confucius Institutes and the universities, and as many others as well. But let's talk about the influence in the business community. And I think we've seen a good example of that just recently, where you had some comments on Facebook or on Twitter or other social media that were critical of the Chinese Communist Party, critical of President Xi, and they influenced so much pressure on these CEOs and the leadership of these companies that they began to ban, to silence, to shadow these types of comments. I mean, why in the world would a U.S. corporation kowtow to the Chinese Communist Party, kowtow to the Chinese leadership against an ideological battle? And that is the battle of ideas about what is the future, what is best for not just American people, but the people of the world. And that's what China's arguing. And if they're able to stifle our ability to counter those arguments, and if U.S. companies are willing to let them help stifle that, I mean, we just have to have these companies understand how incredibly the incredibly negative impact that has on us trying to win this ideological battle with China.
Well, and it may be more than ideological, too, as we were just discussing. Congressman Stewart, of course, you've asked the rhetorical question, why are they doing this? And the answer, I think, is greed. I mean, they're doing it because they think there will be some profit for them, at least in the short run. And they seem, many of them, this is a bit of a generalization, but it seems to be what's going on, particularly in the financial sector. Corporate boardrooms of other kinds too, but most especially in companies that are deeply investing our money in China, including companies associated directly with the People's Liberation Army there. It's a completely indifferent attitude, it seems, towards our national security. And I fear that, unless there is corrective action taken here right quick, we really will find ourselves facing a vastly more formidable enemy, and much of it at our own doing. Which brings me to a related topic, sir, which is the subversion of our political elite. There's a personal example of this that I think is prime, and I know has to be of concern to you and your colleagues on the House Intelligence Committee, at least the Republican side of the aisle, and that is one of your colleagues, Eric Swalwell, is a man who has been known to be compromised by the Chinese Communist Party, specifically a spy by the name of Fang Fang, with whom he apparently had a sexual relationship. It is incomprehensible to me, sir, that that man still has access to the most sensitive secrets of our country as a member of the Intelligence Committee. What is to be done about that? And can it be done right away?
Well, the answer is we have to take back the House, remove Nancy Pelosi as the Speaker of the House, remove Adam Schiff as the Chairman of the Intelligence Committee, and remove Eric Swalwell from the committee. And once again, this
but nothing again, short this of that can be done because of, an obvious, one of our colleagues, Sam Faddis, has said, I believe on this program, that, the chances are this guy is continuing to be run by Chinese handlers, albeit more covertly. But doesn't this rise to a counterintelligence threat that should necessitate corrective action long before those other things take place?
Well, one would think so. But the reality is, as a member of Congress, we can't, and especially in the minority now, we can't initiate a criminal investigation that has to come from the Department of Justice. Good luck getting this Department of Justice to initiate that. And Nancy Pelosi has the ability, and Adam Schiff has the ability, to decide who's on those committees. We can't change that. We can object. We can point out the obvious, as you have said here. We can point out the obvious security and national security implications, but we can't remove him. And I know that's frustrating. Believe me, it's extraordinarily frustrating for me, but that's just the reality of the way Congress works. And one other comment on this that I think is important to note, Frank, and that was, this was not subtle. I mean, all of us are trained. Those of us on the Intelligence Committee are particularly trained and acute to this idea that people are going to try to reach out to us. Foreign governments and foreign adversaries are going to try to penetrate our personal lives and understand us and to influence if so. But you would think they'd be subtle about it. This example is not subtle at all. When you know her history, it's glaringly obvious. The lack of judgment that was shown here is something out of a fiction novel. But as I said, there's very little that we can do to rectify that. It really is up to Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff.
Well, and I think to the American people to raise Cain about all of this, too. That's in order. Let me ask you finally, quickly, sir, about one other piece of this challenge we're facing at the moment. As a member of the Air Force Alumni Association, if I could say that, a veteran with great distinction in terms of your hours in the cockpit, including a world record, flying around the world in a B-1 bomber. Let me ask you about the current readiness of our military in the face of these sorts of threats we've just discussed, and whether we're facing now, against the backdrop of what we've just discussed, a perilous situation with critical race theory and other indoctrination taking place there. Just a minute, sir, if you would.
Yeah, As a former military officer, this makes my heart break to see the politicalization of the military in ways that I never would have imagined even a few years ago. You have to look at the people sitting next to you, whether it's in the cockpit or whether it's down in the trenches, and you have to know that they are your brothers and your sisters, and they will die for you and you will die for them. You will fight for them. They will fight for you. And critical race theory destroys that. It allows us, it forces people to look at each other with suspicion, with hatred. It destroys the ethos of the military. And they should be focusing on destroying our adversaries, not suspicions towards each other. As I said, Frank, it breaks my heart to see this.
It does, and it has to be corrected, sir. We have to let you go. I know. Thank you very much for your time today, Congressman Chris Stewart, and for your great service to our country, both in uniform and that you're rendering these days in the United States House of Representatives. I know you'll keep it up. Come back to us soon if you would, sir.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.